Fasten your seatbelt. I am taking you for the ride of your life. I'm going to show you what this car can really do. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Hang on.
Okay.
Here we go.
Hold on to your butts.
Forget him, kid.
To infinity and beyond!
It might be a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It's not a tumor at all.
So you can go ahead and ask me what you're going to ask me, and my natural response could be to get offended.
Well, fine, let's talk about it.
Any thoughts of your own on this matter? Or is that your thing? You come into a bar, you read some obscure passage, and then pretend you pawn it off as your own idea just to impress some girls?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
All right, all right, all right.
You're listening to the 30-something Movie Podcast. One movie each week, 30 years in the making. Yes, it is the 30-something Movie Podcast. I am your host, John the First, by the grace of God of the 30-something Movie Podcast and podcast full of kryptonite and of other guest spots on other podcast realms and territories. Gloria Angina, defender of the filth. And I am happy to be here with Bo and Pat tonight. Bo, how are you doing?
Yo. I am good, John. How are you?
You're better than good, Bo. You're great.
Ooh. It's getting deep in here already, and we haven't even started talking.
I feel like on some recent episodes, I've been a little punchy, and maybe I wasn't quite so kind. So I want to start with some kindness tonight. So, Pat, are you doing okay?
I'm doing good, man. I just, man, I love you guys.
I love you, man.
Man, I love you guys.
Yeah. I love you too. Pat, why do you hate the movie The Dream Team?
Oh, for crying out loud, John. We're not going there.
What is the one fundamental thing you have wrong with the Flowers for Algernon?
I don't know if I've even seen that movie.
Oh, you don't know? Okay. All right. We'll skip that. Pat, how are you doing? I think you're great too.
I'm doing well. And I just want to say, a truly surreal world. If you go back and listen to our ep on Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Outstanding. Love talking about the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
However, there was a little bit of a gag. Okay. Emphasis on that one where, because we discussed Forrest Gump and this movie in the running for Best Picture and how one, you know, somehow by the game of telephone, it got broadcast on the pod that Pat doesn't like Forrest Gump. And so then that became a running gag throughout, and it got, you know, escalated quickly, and we laughed and all that kind of stuff. So I'm at a family gathering this past weekend, and my sister-in-law looks over, and she, awesome person, and she was saying, yeah, I listen to your podcast every once in a while. And I said, well, that's probably good for your own just sanity and health and all that kind of stuff. But she says, yeah, I kind of pick and choose the movies that I see. And so we talked about it, and she was laughing. I mean, it's been a while since she's listened, and without even any lead in or, hey, I was listening to this recent app. She just looks over. So what's your problem with Forrest Gump? And just out of the blue. And I'm like, oh my God. So anyways, good laugh about that one.
That's outstanding. What is your sister-in-law's name?
It was Julie. Julie gets a shout out.
Julie gets a shout out. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah. Julie's awesome. And I have to tell you, yeah, we label ourselves the outlaws, right? Because we're the in-laws, the outlaws, all that kind of stuff. She is like the one family member that consistently listens to the pod and will talk about it without giving me a hard time. So yeah, Julie's awesome. We really like you. But yeah, when she looked over, she goes, yeah, and it wasn't even a, hey, I was listening to Shawshank Redemption, or yeah, I caught you guys pod or whatever. Just, so what's your problem with Forrest Gump?
That's outstanding.
Yeah, we had good fun.
That's awesome.
Good fun.
That is awesome. Honestly, I don't even know, you know, the fact that she said she listens every once in a while or so. That's probably best. I do feel like sometimes we are like a fine cheesecake. It's a bit rich, and maybe you don't. Maybe there's too much of us is a good thing.
Okay. Yes. Well, I was.
That's what I'm going to go with.
Yes, have some.
Yeah, I like going with the food. I was going to say sort of like the nuclear reactor room in K-19, where you don't want to go in too much because otherwise, you know. But no, I like the food reference.
We're like a Spock box.
Ah, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if too many people go in, you just flood the whole compartment and
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a challenge when compartments start getting flooded.
Yep.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're here to talk about Time Cop.
What a great movie!
Yeah. Do you think
JCDV vehicle?
JCVD. Do you think will Julie like Time Cop? Has she seen it?
My thought is no.
Okay. All right. Well, Julie may want to skip this one then, unless you're interested in JCVD then.
But maybe she wants to hear our shout out. I don't know.
That's true. That's true. That is true. And she might want to learn more as to why you don't like Home Alone.
Oh man.
Wow.
Which there were parts of it I liked. There were just parts of it I struggled with. They picked on that poor kid. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I care.
I understand. And you're a very caring person, so it doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, as I said, we are here to talk Time Cop. We spoil freely, so this is pretty much your only warning. Make sure you visit our website, 30podcast.com. You can leave us a rating, a voicemail. You could become a co-executive producer via Patreon over there. If you go to our Patreon page through our website, there are tons of bonus episodes over there. In fact, we almost have... I think we actually do, if you count the little kind of mini Patreon short episodes. We've got enough episodes, even just in the Patreon, that if you were to listen to one episode every week, you would have enough episodes for an entire year. So,
wow,
we got a lot of bonus stuff over there. So, I don't know how many other podcasts have that much bonus content in their bonus feed. So, I'm going to say we have the most because. I want to say it, so I will.
And nobody's listening, so they're not going to call you out on it.
Nobody's. I mean, they're mowing their lawn, so they don't have time right now to Google and double check on that. So,
and they haven't hired a fact checker to fact check us yet. So
I was going to say they're too busy fact checking presidential candidates. They don't care about me.
Exactly. We're small potatoes.
Right. Right. So, don't worry, Pat. I'm not getting political. Don't worry about it.
I'm not, John, do I look worried?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Pat, why don't you like the movie Primary Colors?
Oh, for crying.
Okay, we'll move on.
For Pete's sake, John, for Pete's sake.
We'll move on. We'll move on. I'll wait until we actually cover the movie Primary Colors and then see if you hate it.
Yeah, let's discuss that one.
Okay, all right, let's see. Trivia pursuits. For this movie, it came out in September 16th, 1994, rated R, with a runtime of 1 hour, 39 minutes, directed by Peter Hyams, who did 2010, End of Days, bunch of other sci-fi movies, Outland. He did Outland. I think that was the Sean Connery from 1981. It's the Sean Connery sci-fi movie. Have you guys seen that one?
I have not.
Is that the one where he's in the funky-looking outfit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. kind of looks like he did his sci-fi shopping at Victoria's Secret.
Okay. Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not very forgiving. Yeah. It's an interesting costume.
This is how they do pants.
Yes. It's the future. This is how we do pants in the future. We don't.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Oh boy. So anyway, writers for this one, Mark Verheiden, who did The Mask, and My Name is Bruce. Mike Richardson did The Mask and Barb Wire. Very, very quickly, speaking of Barb Wire, did you guys hear they are remaking The Naked Gun?
I did. Wait, not. What?
They are remaking The Naked Gun with Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson.
I did not hear about Pamela Anderson.
Yes.
That's interesting.
I did hear about Liam Neeson. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I just saw that the other day.
In a strange way, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay. Not with sure that. I'm kind of curious.
Feel about it in concept, but I'm trying.
Yeah,
is it a Zucker Abrams Zucker? Like, who is what?
I don't know. I haven't read that much up on it yet. I just saw that those were the two actors that they had pegged for it. So,
okay,
yeah. So I'll find out more. I'll do some more research. I'll find out more, and people can come back in a future episode, and maybe we'll have a little discussion.
I'm intrigued by the concept of this.
Bo is Googling it right now, I think, so.
I'm not.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm letting my brain sort of process it first before I... Okay.
I thought that was your Google face, so I wasn't sure.
No, that's my Liam Neeson, Pamela Anderson. What?
That's your thinking face.
Yeah, that's okay. What is happening.
Okay. Yeah.
In the world. Like, why?
Wow. I don't. Well, and I'm going to bring this up, and I don't know if I said it on the pod or if we talked. Yeah, I think I did. When was the last time they actually made a comedy movie? Not a movie with funny bits or an action movie with witty dialogue or, you know, like, but an actual just straight up comedy movie. I don't know.
You mean like that has come out in theaters lately?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't, you know, honestly, I don't tend to go see comedies in the theater.
Right.
So I know there either. Have been some, they just haven't been ones I've seen.
Yeah.
But I, in terms of like great comedy, ones that got to be pretty big, I would say, I don't know, you're probably looking back at the Hangover movies.
I was thinking the Hangover for sure.
But when was that? Was that even?
I mean, that's probably close to 10 years now.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah. I know there have been more recently. I haven't seen them.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Just since the pandemic, I've lost my ability to laugh. So I don't.
Asteroid City from last year, but it's a Wes Anderson, so you got to be, you know.
You got to be in the mood.
Right. And then, that one's a romantic comedy. So we're not counting that. Just trying to do a quick scan here.
So
Liam Neeson.
There have been some, Liam Neeson. I'm curious to see. I think Liam Neeson will be hilarious.
Yeah. I mean,
the original Knives Out wasn't exactly not funny. But now all of a sudden, is a parody movie still a comedy or is that a parody? Is it something else? And that's.
Yeah, I think it's a comedy.
Okay.
I'd give that comedy status.
Because romantic comedy to me is a totally different thing. Like that's not the same.
Okay.
But maybe I'm wrong.
This is the 30 something movie podcast. We're nothing if not wrong.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Well, and then you've got some animated stuff. Cause would you consider Migration a comedy?
I didn't see that one.
It was pretty funny.
Okay.
Now, admittedly, I haven't seen the whole thing. That's one of those things I've seen bits of.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway.
That's an interesting question. Yeah. Like, what is, you know, what would you break out into a separate category of comedy, right? Like, action comedy is its own thing. I think we can all agree on that. But what else would you separate? That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you've had, like, what, like that Nicolas Cage one, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yeah, just the title of that's funny.
Yeah. You know, there was the Coming to America sequel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good.
There was.
That was probably the last one I, like,
okay.
I still haven't seen when it came out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, gotta watch.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it.
The day it came out on streaming, I was on that one.
Okay.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. It, unfortunately, I feel like as good as it is, it just makes you want to watch the original, though. If that makes sense, you know?
I was pulling up a list real quick of some. There was one from 2021 called The Mitchells versus the Machines. It's the animated one that was pretty funny.
Old Dads was funny.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, we're digging a little deep for some of these. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing, I think the last several years or so, especially if you're looking back, let's say the last 3 or 4 years, so much of it has been on streaming services, and we don't all have every streaming service.
Right.
So instead of going to see it in the theater, it's on Netflix or it's on Prime or it's on HBO Max or whatever. So.
Right. And even if it, you know, even if it did premiere in a theater, if you didn't see it in the theater, it's we don't have that central repository we all used to have of the video store where everyone can go see it.
Right.
Once it hits streaming, even if it did hit the theater first, once it hits streaming, it's all over the place.
Right. once it's there, I got to pay for, you know, Paramount Plus, and I'm still mad at them about the Billy Joel concert. So
that was a disaster. So it did lead me to have to tell my wife the Heidi story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because she didn't know about that one.
Yeah. I immediately went onto Twitter because as soon as I was, I mean, I wanted to pop myself a bowl of popcorn, just go on Twitter and start watching. Because as soon as that happened, I was like, I need to see, I want to see what's trending. Because I guarantee
what's trending.
I guarantee it has four letters and it starts with F and ends with CBS. And did not disappoint. There were some really funny people on Twitter when that happened. Funny, angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of them. I might have tweeted some stuff, but that's okay. anyway, moving on. The producers for this one were Moshe Diamant, who did Universal Soldier and Sudden Death. Sam Raimi, who did Evil Dead 2 and Darkman. Composer was Mark Isham, who did The Hitcher and Point Break, a movie that I hate, as we all know. cinematographer Peter Hyams, who did The Relic and End of Days. And surfers. I can't stand surfers. I think they have dubious personal hygiene.
I knew there had to be something.
Yeah, dubious personal hygiene. And it's just, as a group of people, I think they're awful and reprehensible. Editor was Stephen Kemper.
Wow, that's going in a little harsh even for us.
That's okay. Now I figure the surfing community is going to join our Patreon, so we're okay now.
I love surfers. I love surfing.
Don't say that, Pat. You just sabotaged it. You know how this works. The whole podcast is basically reverse psychology.
So what you're saying is Pat hates everything is the new theme of our podcast.
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yes. In fact, I'm thinking of redubbing the podcast Pat Hates Everything, a 30-something movie podcast story.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's going to be one whole episode that comes out and it's just going to be me dubs saying, I hate this.
Yeah. Can we, when we need
it? I'm glad you've come around to the realization with the rest of us.
I think when we need a special episode sometime, we'll just do an episode just with Pat and it'll just be, what is everything Pat hates? And we'll just talk about that for like 45 minutes.
You know,
there it is.
We're sort of being funny here, but a special episode of Pat's least liked movies is not the worst idea we've ever had.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Never did get to do Dennis's, like, you know, who is Dennis and let's get to know him. So we're down one episode that we owe the people.
There we go.
Like, all the way back from like 8 years ago, we have an episode we still owe them because Dennis is delinquent.
Dennis? Oh my God, that's the funniest.
We've gone 8 years and we still don't even know who Dennis is.
We should have Pat do the I'm Dennis episode.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, who knows Dennis better than Dennis but Pat?
Right.
Who do you know with more Dennis stories than Pat?
Pat, right.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it all makes sense.
Oh my goodness.
Stephen Kemper edited this movie. He did Beverly Hills Cop 3, so we have him to blame. And then he did Mission Impossible 2. I was going to
say, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real tough when you stick your name on that. Production company Largo Entertainment, budget was $27 million, box office $101.6 million. Flick Metrics gives it a 54%, Cinema Score gives it a B+. Monsieur JCVD is Max Walker. He was in Bloodsport and Universal Soldier. Mia Sara was Melissa Walker. She was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Legend. Indeed, Chuck Norris is Walker, Texas Ranger. He was not in this movie. Ron Silver was Senator McComb. He was in Blue Steel and The Arrival. Bruce McGill played Commander Matuzik. He was in The Insider and Ride Along. Gloria Rubin was Fielding. She was in Lincoln and the TV series ER. Scott Bellis was Ricky. He was in The X-Files and Smallville. Jason Schombing was Lyle Atwood. He was in Fantastic Four and Watchmen. Scott Lawrence was Spotta. He was in Avatar and Star Trek Into Darkness. Kenneth Welsh was Senator Utley. He was in The Aviator and The Day After Tomorrow. Brad Lurie played Reyes. He was in Halloween Resurrection and X-Men The Last Stand. Kevin McNulty was Jack Parker. He was in Fantastic Four and Snakes on a Plane. And Gabrielle Rose was Judge Marshall. She was in The Sweet Hereafter and If I Stay. Some quick trivia stuff for this one. This is based on the Dark Horse comic book series of the same name. So this is a comic book movie. I have, as much as I love the Dark Horse comics from the 80s and 90s, I have not read this one. So I would be curious at some point to go track down that source material and check it out just to kind of see, because we know I love a good time travel story. A couple of interesting things about this movie. This is the first JCVD movie to cross $100 million worldwide, and his apparently his highest grossing solo movie as of the year 2024. And that's what makes this kind of interesting, because it was so successful, it also kind of started to lead to his downfall. So by
too big for his britches.
Yes. So he started to try and demand, after this movie, he started to try and demand a $20 million per film salary, which at the time was a little bit high, and the same as Jim Carrey, who was one of the highest paid folks at the time as well. And basically they said, no, because you don't make that much money for us. So no. And then he, you know, ended up turning to alcohol, cocaine, had to go through rehab. And basically it messed up his reputation in Hollywood. And, you know, that coupled with the drug abuse and everything else kind of led to diminishing returns on some of his movies from that point on. So it was at it was his peak, but also the start of his downfall. Pat, I thought you would enjoy this little piece of trivia. Future Max, so 2004 Max, his hairstyle was partially influenced by Wolverine from the X-Men comics.
All right. I like it.
And,
I like that. That's
and
good.
And when Max is dressed up and in his uniform, I think even sometimes when he's not in his uniform, he is wearing Wolverine brand work boots.
That's outstanding.
So there's a couple of Wolverine connections there.
That's good. We need more of those in this world.
This one's kind of fun. And this one, this is just one of those stories that you like to hear stories about how movies get made and kind of stuff that happens behind the scenes. The virtual reality, the VR nude scene, that was it was originally supposed to be a nature documentary about beavers. However, the film team that was supposed to go to
To the Naked Gun all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Right up our alley.
The film team that was supposed to go to the nature reserve and film beavers for this fake documentary got drunk on the evening of shooting and ended up in a strip club. They woke up the next morning realizing they had missed the bus to the nature preserve and instead had to film one of the dancers they met in the club the night before. So.
Okay.
Real true Hollywood story right there.
Yeah.
Bruce McGill, the actor, no stranger to policing time. Do you gentlemen remember where you might know him from? A TV franchise that is near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah, I was going to say this. I was misplacing the name, but yeah, he plays Bruno Gianelli in West Wing.
West Wing.
Well, there's that. But yes, I was thinking of a different one in terms of policing time and time travel.
What else is he in?
He is he's Captain Braxton of the Time Police in Star Trek Voyager.
Oh my God! Yes, he is.
Oh my! Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Did I get this right? That's the same guy. Is this? Hang on.
Different. I think you're thinking of a different. You're right, but we're talking about two different people.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was thinking of a different thing.
You're thinking of Ron Silver, right?
Oh, who's okay? Who plays the senator?
The senator is Ron Silver.
That's Bruno Gianelli.
That's okay. So this guy, I got who is now this guy plays the who now?
He was Captain Braxton in those episodes in Voyager where they do they do some time travel stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Captain Braxton, and this is the captain in Jean-Claude, his captain.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Now I'm with it. Now I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yes.
So no stranger to policing time travel.
Yes, exactly.
And apparently this one I am not as familiar with, but supposedly He also was in, let's see, what was it? No, no, that was the name of the name of the episode was Relativity, I believe. Yeah, where he is Captain Braxton of the kind of the Time Police. So,
okay.
As I mentioned before, Peter Hyams has done a lot of sci-fi, fantasy, space movies. Capricorn One, Outland, 2010, Stay Tuned, Time Cop, End of Days, and The Relic. So he has a lot of different movies in the sci-fi fantasy genre. So.
All right, not a stranger for that.
Not a stranger. All right. Quick synopsis for this one. In a world where time travel is a reality, one man stands in the way of its abuse. Jean-Claude Van Damme stars as Max Walker, a Time Enforcement Commission agent battling corruption within the very system he protects.
Time travel.
Doing, partner?
Ex-partner.
Let me go, Max. Look, I'm not hurting anybody.
Got to take you back.
In the year 2004, time travel is a reality.
You're charged with violations of TEC code 40.8, time travel with intent to alter the future.
And a crime.
It turns out going back in time is a pretty easy way to make money.
I think you got yourself a shipment of gold and you're taking a General Lee.
The genie is already out of the bottle. The technology is there.
Now, one man.
You ever hear the name Aaron McComb?
Is about to take the ultimate power trip.
He's gonna be president.
You don't need the press, you don't need endorsements, you don't even need the truth. You need money.
But to enforce the laws of time.
Are we still together in 10 years? Am I dead?
One man is determined to stop him.
I cannot go back to save her.
This scumbag is not going back to steal money.
Stay here, Walker. My future, you're dead.
I think you planned too far ahead.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Ron Silver.
Will you get him?
Mia Sara.
It's an action movie trailer from the late 80s and early 90s, so it's going to use the Alien soundtrack as its musical score. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love hearing that. I mean, you know exactly where it's from, but I always enjoy that when it shows up in a trailer, which it does a lot. Yeah. All right, so major moments for this one. We kind of break the plot down into 10 major moments to summarize it for you. So as we travel through time here, allow us to regale you with the highlights of the story. Time travel. 1863, a time traveler uses futuristic weapons to kill Confederate soldiers in Gainesville, Georgia, steals a shipment of gold that illustrates dangers of unregulated time travel and kind of sets up what our conflict is going to be about here. So this was a fun beginning. Of course, the movie's called Time Cop, so you know there's going to be some time travel involved. But that's kind of a fun way to start. You have, you know, the guy's on horseback, and you got the guy, you know, stopping him in the road, and he's like, well, I'm going to need to take that gold from you. And, you know, expectation would be he pulls out a six-shooter and takes care of it all. Oh, no. Very much automatic weapons, lots and lots of fun. So, and I feel like that kind of did a nice job of setting the tone for the rest of the movie.
I would concur.
Yeah, in a way that a lot of movies struggle with. They did a really good job of showing, not telling. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't preach to you about the evils of time travel. They just said, here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, when you absolutely positively must kill every last Confederate soldier in the past, accept no substitutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. When we head back to the future, that's going to be tough for me to say without making like little comments or hearing a twinkling noise.
Dun,
in the background.
Dun, dun.
Diddle. Yeah. I can't do the twinkling noise. So we're back in 1994. When we get to the future will be in 2004. So we're 10 years ahead when we get to that point, but we're back in 1994 and we learn a little bit about the invention of time travel, by Dr. Hans Kleindast, I think. Yeah. Not said as German in the movie as the way I just said it, but I feel like it's more fun to say it that way.
Indeed.
It could be. Mm-hmm. It should be.
It should be. Yeah. Why is Kleindienst? The U.S. Department of Justice establishes the Time Enforcement Commission to prevent the past from being altered. And Max Walker is offered a job with the TEC, but before he can accept, his wife Melissa is killed, and he is nearly killed in a house explosion. So I had a quick little comment as I'm watching the movie, because I've never seen this movie before. This is my first time watching this one. And I'm watching this movie, and I know in the back of my mind, I'm like, there are certain parts of a JCVD movie that I just need to turn my brain off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I go into watching a Steven Seagal movie or Jean-Claude Van Damme or something like that. I know there's parts, I can't take it too seriously. And it's an action movie. So honestly, it's an action movie about time travel. I can't take this too seriously, and no one should. However, I will say, as I'm watching this and we get to this scene, I'm picturing somebody in the writer's room of this movie sitting down with a book that is movie tropes for dummies and finding the bullet point list of what can we do to a guy who is a cop or an agent of some kind? Like, what are the things that we can do to him that's going to cause him to want to get revenge on the villain?
Mm-hmm.
Let's threaten and possibly kill his wife and or girlfriend. Let's mm-hmm. have a moment where we shoot him, but he's not actually dead because he had a bulletproof vest on. Let's also blow up his house. Like, I felt like as we're going through all that, I'm like, one of those would have been bad enough. I'm like, oh man, they got his wife. They're going to kill him. They're going to hurt her. They're going to do whatever. Like, that's enough in and of itself. Oh, they shot him. It's 5 minutes into the movie, and he might be dead already. I bet he's not dead. And then the house explodes, and I'm like, okay. I mean, one of these would have been fine, and I think we could have said, yeah, actually, the guy's going to want to get revenge, but nope. We just decided to blow our entire movie trope revenge budget all in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, it is a time travel movie.
Where shooting a man, killing his wife, or blowing his house up mm-hmm. could individually get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. They did all three. Mm-hmm. There's the trailer right there.
Three times the action. Three times the Rwenge.
Three times the Rwenge.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The other thing I'm concerned about for the future, and when I say future, I mean 20 years in our past, is that every car has become a Tesla Cybertruck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
How do we, I know you, the two of you are much more car guys than I am, so talk to me about the aesthetic of the future car in 2004. How do you feel about it?
I mean, they put it, not only is it shaped and angled like a Cybertruck, but then they took Voyager's ablative armor and put it over it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Because everybody needs an assault vehicle now.
It's a dangerous world.
I do find it so humorous when they try to, what are cars and what is that all going to look like in the future? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it, and obviously this movie, I feel like there was a lot of tongue-in-cheek and humor and all this kind of thing, but yeah, I find that, I too noted this Tesla Cybertruck, and I found that funny.
Yeah. Well, the world was a rough place after the franchise wars, and the only thing that was left was Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm.
So.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
The
I also like
the world's a dangerous place, but we're trying to do our best to live Moss.
I really like their attention to the detail where the little news broadcasts you'd hear in the background mm-hmm. and the little things like, you know, when they were talking about the political parties and all that.
Yes.
There was some fun tongue in cheek little tidbits in there that kind of showed you, you know, I think they were trying to show you like, you know, what they probably perceived to be, man, if we keep going down this road, this is how extreme it's going to be.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like just showing you little things like a little that. It was fun to pick up on those details. And I think a lot of it was just like news broadcasts, or they would talk about the political rally between the such and such party and the such and such party, you know, and it was all very tongue in cheek and all very funny.
And it wasn't there like a white supremacist party?
There was a white supremacist party. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah.
I want to be careful because I don't want to become the 30 something movie podcast. And it occurred to me that as I talk about a bunch of that stuff that we could, but 30 something, I don't want to become the 30 something politics podcast. That's what I meant to say. But just if you haven't seen the movie, watch through and you might get a kick out of the way they do some of their news broadcasts and talk politics and all that.
It's fun when they put little Easter eggy stuff like that.
Yes. Agreed.
So Walker begins his pursuit of this kind of mystery by checking out these different disturbances as he travels to 1929 to arrest his former partner, Lyle Atwood, who is exploiting future knowledge to profit from the stock market crash, which kind of an interesting introduction to that scene, too, kind of a nonchalantly, like people diving out of windows and crashing to the ground. Yeah. And it's just kind of like oh, yeah. Oh, well.
Right.
It's like, all right, you see that kind of thing every day. So Atwood is executed after revealing that he was coerced by Senator McComb, who is funding his presidential campaign through illicit time travel. And that's kind of the whole crux of the movie, is that they're using time travel to fund his political campaign. And I don't know, there's a part of me that, again, maybe I started to think too much through this part of it. I'm like, I feel like there's easier ways. If you want to illegally find ways to get money, there's probably easier ways than time traveling. Because it seems like if time travel needs to be policed and is as dangerous as we think it might be, don't you have the potential to mess up all kinds of stuff by going too far back in time and making changes? Right. And I'm thinking of, you want to go back and get a little campaign finance stuff going, but then somebody steps on a butterfly and all of a sudden, we're all
right
in a feudal system.
Well, it is kind of an over elaborate type idea, but it really, it kind of works because the mechanics are there for there to be a fun romp through time and space and all that. Through time. And when you look at the actual heist and what they're doing, it does seem overly complex, and there is an easier way to maybe get to your goal, to your end means. But
it's a fun twist on the corrupt politician movie.
Yes.
And honestly, not that we're turning into the political podcast, I'll just say this about in general, but. Since when has politics ever done anything the easy way?
Okay.
Maybe that's why the plan is convoluted.
Oh, fair point.
Okay.
I'm guessing. I don't know. Let's see. Walker takes a partner with him, Sarah Fielding, and they have a fun little jaunt into the past as he's making her a bit nervous. Talking about the red spots on the wall where a couple people who had traveled back in time before maybe didn't make it. I really hope that maybe that was just a joke and that's not really what happened, but I kind of get the feeling it probably was.
Seems like a thing.
It kind of does. Yeah. They uncover younger Senator McComb's involvement in a lucrative business deal, but the older McComb interferes, killing his business partner and revealing that Fielding is working with him. And from what we understand, she is subsequently killed by McComb in a shootout. Max ends up going back to the altered future. It's skewed off into an alternate timeline. Mm-hmm. So he's in 2004A, where his father was shot. Biff is in charge of everything. And McComb is now a powerful presidential candidate and has basically started to dismantle the TEC. With Matuszak's help, and there's some fun little scenes there where they don't seem to know each other as well, even though they were best friends in the original timeline. Walker learns about McComb's plan and prepares to go back and restore the original timeline. As he prepares to return to the past, Matuszak is killed in a shootout there, defending the TEC from McComb's guards. Walker goes back in time and finds Fielding recovering in a hospital under the name Jane Doe. That she didn't die, but she's not quite dead yet. She's getting much better. And
she feels happy.
Yeah, she feels happy. She might go for a walk. But she is ultimately killed by a couple of McCombs henchmen. And I was super excited. I don't know if you guys recognized, but these henchmen were, and I'm so excited that they were getting
they
a chance.
They felt familiar.
I'm convinced that this is another opportunity for Knuckles and Hutch from Suburban Commando to get some work.
Yes.
Awesome.
That's outstanding.
Honestly, though, the one of them that looked like the Undertaker's character from Suburban Commando, it almost looked like if that was his character in Suburban Commando, but if Paul Rubens was the stunt double.
Now that's funny.
It was like a cross between Pee Wee Herman and The Undertaker.
That's a heck of a combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Why are we killing people? I don't know. So we're going to try to prevent a tragedy now. We're heading back to 1994, and on the day of his wife's murder, Walker, Texas Ranger, warns his past self and Melissa of the impending attack, and together they end up fending off McComb's henchmen. The older McComb takes Melissa hostage at their house, threatens to kill everyone with a bomb. Walker ingeniously brings back the 1994 McComb and causes a bit of an issue, because if he blows up the house with younger McComb in there, then older McComb will cease to exist. And then if they go back to then, when will then be now?
Mm-hmm.
And do they know that we know? That we know whether or not we know what we know?
If we know what we know is what we think we know.
Correct. I think. Yeah. So, anyway, and I will tell you, this is probably my favorite part of the entire movie, is, and they've hinted at this a few times, that the same thing cannot occupy the same space from different times.
Yeah.
It was totally Chekhov's gun. Like, they were talking about it too much not to pay off.
Right. Right. By the way, the same thing cannot occupy this. Oh, okay. Well, thank you. That's, yeah. So, yes, basically, Chekhov's flesh blob is what ends up happening to Senator McComb. Honestly, that was my favorite part of the movie. As somebody who loves a good gory horror movie, when he pushes him into the other guy and they turn into like a mass of flesh and teeth and whatever it is, I'm sitting there going, all right, well, this movie is now paid off for me, so I'm good. Thank you so much for including that. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So I was a fan of the flesh blob. That brings an end to Senator McComb. And we find out in the future that Walker returns to a corrected 2004, although it's not the same 2004 that he left. He's fixed a few things, you know, for his benefit. Matuszak is there. Fielding is alive but doesn't know who he is. McComb has vanished since 1994. He canceled all of his meetings and disappeared. And he is, Walker, Texas Ranger, is able to reunite with his wife and son, having preserved his family and the timeline. So all is right with the world. I would have loved for the final, what does the kid say at the end? Dad, you said you'd barbecue hot dogs. I would have loved it if he would have done like one more one-liner. He's like, I did. His name was Senator McComb.
There you go.
Yeah, he needs a good little, like, there was like the series of Jean-Claude Van Damme or Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners in this movie related to time. So I would have loved one more right there. But I get that, you know, it's the sentimental scene and he's there with his family and it's fine. So we don't want to, you don't always have to bring in the humor.
Yes.
So a couple of quick things I wanted to comment on before we get into our deeper thoughts and then our three questions is, I thought it was a little interesting, and talking about things being a little bit more complex than they needed to be, I thought the whole time travel thing, the whole mechanics of the time travel was kind of interesting, because you start in a pod, and you have to get rocketed towards the wall, and then when you get rocketed towards the wall and you go through the time bloop-bloop, you come out the other side just walking out of the time bloop-bloop. And
or almost getting run over by a truck,
which was a fun scene, almost getting run over by a truck. But then when it's time to go back to where you came from, to get back to where you once belonged, you just kind of walk into the time bloop and you don't need a pod of any kind.
And yet you come back in the pod.
But you come back in the pod, right.
Where's the pod go? Where's the pod go, Hal?
Yeah.
What I want to know.
I agree with everything that's being said here. It is an interesting mechanic.
Why did the pod disappear, Todd? I don't know, Margo.
I don't know, Margo.
So, yeah, that was my one question about the mechanics of time travel in this. The other thing that, and I understand it's meant to be dramatic, but I got a little bit of a chuckle at, was when the bomb is about to go off and he picks up his wife who has been shot and carries her out of the house, that is the longest 13 seconds in history.
Oh, my God, yes.
I know.
In fact,
I know movies always play with that, with the time of a bomb.
Yeah.
But that was a long time.
Yeah.
It's a little blatant.
We know that it takes Riker 17 seconds to get from the bridge to sickbay, but this was like from the upstairs to outside in the front yard was the longest 13 seconds ever.
Ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know it's meant to be like an action movie. It's dramatic and it's tension filled and everything else, but I'm sitting there thinking, this is like those movies where they play up slow motion to a comedic effect.
Yes.
That's how I feel about this. And I'm kind of chuckling, even though I'm probably not supposed to.
Well, isn't that just true, though?
But, you know, we do know that sometimes I laugh at things that aren't meant to be laughed at.
Well, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme. There's going to be something that is unintentionally funny.
Yeah.
It's just part of the game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. It's time for Deep Thoughts.
And now, Deep Thoughts.
I have an opinion on this matter.
Don't mince words, Bones. What do you really think?
I like it a lot.
Wow. It's very deep. Thank you.
I almost hesitate having a segment called Deep Thoughts on a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. But, you know, this is the time where we give more of our opinions about everything. So I think I already know the answer, but how do you feel about this movie?
I dug it. I had a lot of fun watching this movie.
Was this the first time you'd seen it?
So I want to say no.
Okay.
But I think if it was, then I've only seen parts of it, or it was so long ago that I just don't remember it. But I think this was the first time. But I had a lot of fun.
You saw it in a previous timeline, but it got corrected.
The timeline got corrected. So All I have is little snippets.
It's a little deja vu.
Snippets. Little deja vu when they change something in the Matrix.
If you will. Yeah.
Yes. But no, I really liked the movie. Had a lot of fun with it. I didn't bog down in too many of the details, like tap, tap, tap on the microphone. Why do they ride in the car going back? And like that stuff didn't bother me because I don't think the movie was trying to be goofy, but it did lean into the fun, you know, and there was stuff when it's quirky, they seem to kind of enjoy that, you know, bringing that out. And I like the fights. I like the you know, the mechanics of it. And I like the different little bits of humor. I like the little, like we said earlier, all the little attention to detail with things. I really just had a lot of fun watching this movie. It's the kind of movie to just get the bowl of popcorn and have a good time with.
Yeah.
So
Bodacious, what about you?
I think Pat's right. It's a great popcorn movie. You know, it's just fun. You have to go in knowing what you're going to get from a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. You're not going in looking for, you know, a film. This is a movie and it's fun.
It's no Forrest Gump, I'll tell you that.
Mia Sara's cute, so that helps. Yeah. You know, he gets to kick a little butt. You get a little time travel action, and they do the time travel sci-fi stuff well. Like it's not, they don't try to overburden you with the tech, but they give you enough to keep you interested. You know, there are some weird things, but it's not, the point of the movie isn't the time travel, so they don't have to linger on it.
Right.
It's what the time travel does to the world and to people. So they don't have to get that perfectly right. And I think they balance it well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, Bo, to your point, I think they explain the mechanics of what's happening. They explain the challenge, you know, like the, okay, don't occupy the same spot. Okay. That's going to be challenge. All right. We ride in the car going back. You know, I think it doesn't have to be, well, if this was really time travel, this is where, how it would happen. It just has to be something fun that the audience can understand and be entertained watching the main characters toil with these challenges. And I think, I think it's all right there.
Yeah. And I'm excited that we finally got to learn what happened, you know, Matuszek, in his past life when he went to college, was, Bruce McGill's character known as Daniel Simpson Day. I'm excited to find out what happened to him after we knew that he had no grade point average, all courses incomplete. And yet he becomes the head of the TEC. I think that's exciting. Probably worked with Senator and Mrs. Blutarsky as well.
I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So always excited to see him. I enjoyed this movie. Like, I went into it with no expectations. This is one of those that
helps.
Yeah. Like, I've seen the cover of this. I remember going to Blockbuster. I remember seeing the cover to this movie every time you walk past the sci-fi section. You know, mostly because I was probably looking for, like, Terminator or something else that was in the tease and would see this one as well. And, you know, after having watched Universal Soldier when I was in middle school, I knew who Jean-Claude Van Damme was. And, you know, he was, the 90s were his time. So especially the early 90s were his time. So you'd see a lot of his movies around. And they were ones that my friends and I were seeking out because we wanted the action movies with the, you know, kind of the sci-fi action with the fighting and the whatnot. So, sure. Yeah, I had never seen it. This was the first time watching it, but it was one that going in with no expectations, or at least the expectations of it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I'm not going to watch, you know, an Oscar worthy performances by anybody or Oscar worthy writing or anything like that. I'm going in to watch some people get roundhouse kicked to the face. I'm going in to watch some time travel, some action, probably some people get a little shot up. The added bonus of the Chekhov's flesh blob that came into the end of it there. Yeah, the
taser was pretty cool.
The taser was fun. Yeah. So a lot of fun stuff. A lot of fun stuff in this one.
With the water where you get to see him do the splits.
Yes.
You know, right. Right. I mean, that was pretty outstanding.
That was the most dramatic way to get out of electrocution I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know.
And having seen that, I watched that scene and I was like, yeah, if that was me, I'd just be dead by now.
Right.
There's no way. Like nothing about the physical nature of me splits in that way. Mm-hmm. So it's not happening.
That's a very good point. Mm-hmm.
I accept my fate. There is no fate but what we make it, and my lack of flexibility and physical prowess, I've made my fate, and I just now have to sleep in it.
There it is.
Yeah.
So, there it is.
Impressive though. That was an impressive move. So
most impressive.
That was one of those, I feel like as a kid, when you go watch some of these action movies, like you want to go home and you want to reenact some of it. I mean, I remember as a kid watching the 1990 Ninja Turtles movie, and I was like, you know what? I bet if I just practice a little bit, I could be a ninja too. And then, you know, like every kid would go home and start, like, you know, throwing stuff to pretend they're throwing stars, or they'd start, you know, I'm an expert in ninjutsu, and I could, like, roundhouse kick the same way the turtles can and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then you watch Jean-Claude Van Damme make a move like that. And I'm like, I'm not trying that. I know thyself and, no, mm-hmm. no, it's not,
right.
It's not happening. So no, a fun movie. And I think that's what works about this movie is it gives you enough of those little details, like you were saying, the little news things that are going on in the TV in the background. It gives you enough of those little details for you to be interested in the world, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. It doesn't spend a ton of time with the world building, but it gives you enough to make sure you're interested and to make sure you have a pretty good sense of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed it for what it was. And as I said many times before, I love a good time travel movie. So I'm always curious.
And I confess that there was some of the stuff that we, with the guns, these guns, because I watched this a little bit earlier on in the cycle for watching our movies. Did all the guns have laser sights on this one? Or most of the guns, like the futuristic, because there was one of the movies, and I think it was this one, where they all have the laser sights, but they don't use them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
There's something interesting about the guns that I remember. The guns used by most of the characters are actually Beretta 92Fs and H&K MP5 models with some extra stuff added to the end of the barrels. Mm-hmm. The same guns have been used in other movies and TV series, and predominantly at Stargate Atlantis. So, yeah, they are kind of goofy in how they portray the guns. Because they're trying, it's like some of the other stuff. It's like the car. We're trying to be the future, but we don't really know what we're doing.
Right, or you want to make the future rather pastiche or comic bookish, or you know what I'm saying? It's fun. And it's funny how that visual language with that really can kind of set the tone. I mean, these kind of look like futuristic, kind of like ray guns, like flash, bang, boom, you know, like that kind of stuff. And just by the way they make the guns look. And what was it? I'm totally unrelated, but Andor, spoilers for Andor.
Mm.
Waiting, Andor, spoilers. Okay, when they go into the middle section and he ends up helping out that, like, the freedom fighters or the resistance team or whatever.
Yeah.
Their blasters resemble AK-47s, which very much set it in that whole, freedom fighter kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like that, with the visual language made the blasters look like AK-47s. That makes your brain go a certain direction. Oh, they're trying to draw a parallel to this time in history or this area, you know, partisan fighters and, you know, like a communist type regime. Anyways, that's kind of like the same thing here. You know, you see the visual language tells you that we're in the future, but it's kind of a whiz bang, flash bang, and it kind of silly future.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. All done with like the visual language of the tools or the cars or the firearms.
Right.
Agreed.
All right. Is there anything else we want to say about this one before we head into three questions? Fun movie. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out.
Yeah. Check it out.
Fun movie. I would say a really, like, a fun movie and, you know, a pretty good performance all around.
Yeah.
Yeah, as much as I say that, you know, that's not going to be Oscar worthy, it's also not, you know, campy or ridiculous or anything like that. Like there weren't any performances that I'm looking at and going, yikes, that was not good.
Right.
Like everybody did fine. Like nobody was phoning it in. Nobody was hamming it up. I think everything was, you know, Senator McComb was adequately chewing scenery.
Yes.
But yeah. All right. I think it's time for three questions. Are you ready for three questions?
Prepared.
I don't know if we need to hop in a pod and go back in time or if we can just bloop our way into the three questions. We'll see. We'll see what happens. The three questions cannot occupy the same pace at the same space at the same time.
That would be bad.
I just want to say, here's another thing that cracked me up, and it's kind of dark, but when they sentence the one guy to death, you know, it's not like some kind of a futuristic, what am I trying to say? You know, like where it's like a firing, well, or I was going to say like an injection or something like that, a humane way, you know, if you can have, you know, capital punishment in a humane way.
We're going to drop you off the building.
We're going to put you right back where we left you. We're just going to let you fall from the building.
Yeah.
I mean, like that kind of stuff. Yeah, that was humorous.
Yeah.
He asks each traveler five questions. Three questions. It's impossible to answer.
Impossible because you don't know the answer.
Nobody could answer that question.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
All right. Three questions. What is your favorite historical heist, either fictional or non-fictional? And I have several. I listed several heist.
Yeah, this is tough.
Several heist movies and one real life heist that I just think is fun and ridiculous.
Well, I think my favorite real life heist, and this is, as usual, my answers have a twinge of recency bias to them, but I recently read an article about D.B. Cooper again. That has always fascinated me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the D.B. Cooper money heist.
Nice.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite heist movie?
Ocean's 11.
Okay.
Both of them.
Yeah.
That it's great. The Italian Job's really good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Ocean's 11 is, there's something special about it.
Yeah. And that, those, I really like the whole franchise. I mean, all the remakes and everything like that. Or sequels, I should say. I really, those are so good.
And, you know, just the group of, we're talking about Oceans, the Oceans franchise, all of a sudden, but the cast they put together in both of them, the original and the remake, like, your mind is just blown by the talent that is represented in those films.
Yes.
And that they seem like they're having fun doing it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing of a heist movie. Heist is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Patrick, yes. What have you got?
I really like Bo's answer. I'm going to say it goes away because this is a little bit different. I really like Heat. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now that's not like a fun heist movie. I mean, there are heists in it and, but it's more of like a cop drama. You know what I'm saying? So, You know, as I was thinking through, I first thought that one, but that doesn't quite necessarily go along with the fun aspect. You mentioned the Italian Job. That one was really good. I'll tell you the one that I really, really like is going all the way back. And oh my God, I just forgot the title. I'm drawing a blank on it. What's the one where Clint Eastwood steals the plane? He steals the super secret Russian fighter. Okay. Now I'm really embarrassed.
Firefox.
Yep.
Firefox. Thank you. I was just saying, I really liked Firefox. And I remember watching that with my dad and my grandpa. And it would seem we'd watch that multiple times. And I just love it that the whole, anytime it's like that buildup of, hey, you got to get from point A to point B and then meet up with this group. And that takes you to point C. And then you're going to do this. And that, you know, I just like everything about that movie. So I'd have to say Firefox would be my favorite.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, John, unleash the list.
In terms of mine. Movie wise, I also mentioned, in my list, I had Ocean's 11. I did Mission Impossible as another one, Inception. I do love that
nice.
One.
The
worst one obviously is Point Break.
Obviously.
Oh boy.
For one very obvious reason, this is not the top of my list, but in terms of robbery heist movies, there is a very obvious reason I really enjoy the movie Reindeer Games.
Okay. Yes.
Dreamweaver. I believe you can get me through the night.
feel free to Google the cast and you'll understand why. Especially if you've seen that one. One of my, and this is also going to be a little recency bias. One of my favorites is just because I feel like I've watched it several times recently, and I just really, really, really love that movie. Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie. It is such a good movie. And I'm not even saying it's the best heist movie of all time. I'm just saying I've watched it a lot recently, and I really, really enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
Real life heist. Bo is, as you said, you know, that you have a tendency to, tendency for some of your answers to kind of follow, you know, similar paths. As usual, mine is going to have a food aspect to it. I am choosing the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist of 2011.
There you go.
Oh my goodness.
So apparently this was one of the most valuable in Canadian history up until the year 2023. Nearly 14 million American dollars and 3,000 tons of maple syrup were stolen over the course of several months.
Oh my goodness.
So.
That's outstanding.
And I really enjoy maple syrup, so I felt like that was a good mixture for me. But yeah, they apparently were, over the course of several months, they were siphoning out maple syrup, and they were replacing it with water. And then they, you know, would take that and sell it and make as much money as they could, I guess.
I think there's really only one thing to say about that.
That's extraordinary. What would you like to do next?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And supposedly at the time, the amount that was stolen was 70% of the world's supply of maple syrup.
Wow.
So.
That kind of blows me away.
I thought it was an interesting story. So I'm not even going to attempt to try to say it in the original French, but, you know.
Or the original Klingon, for that matter.
I mean, you should always hear it in the original Klingon. You haven't heard it. You haven't heard French until you've heard it in the original Klingon.
That's what they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can we make Star Trek III a heist movie? Or does it have a heist scene?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not?
That whole stealing the Enterprise routine is just so cool.
Oh, yeah. No, that could be a heist movie. That's acceptable. Question number two. If you had to hide out in the past for about a week or so, what year would you go to? I don't have a specific year. Like, I don't have just one year that I'm like, I would go to 1972. Like, I don't have a specific
right.
one. I'm always interested in, you know, kind of the Art Deco period of history. So I'm thinking like sometime in the 1920s could be fun.
Mm.
I was looking up, I'm like, when are some of the most influential, impactful, like years in history? And I was looking at, you know, like specifically like 1920. There was a ton of stuff that happened in 1920, but just throughout the decade of the 1920s, I don't know. You know, obviously you've got the stock market crash later, and you've got the depression in the 30s, and you know, war in the 40s. I mean, there'd be stuff I'd love to see in all of those, but just some of the stuff I was reading up on in, you know, kind of like 1920 specifically, I was like, that would be kind of cool. Like, I'd go back in time, spend a week. Just kind of see, and knowing that it's about 100 years back from where we are now, I just would be curious to see what things were really and truly like, you know, 100 years ago. So I'm going to pick sometime in the early 1920s. If I had to narrow it down, I'd just go ahead and pick 1920. I feel like that's also safe enough. Like, it's not, you're not going back in time and you're going to get run through with a sword or a spear or something. So you would
hope. Well, see, and that is an interesting point to your question, because it's like, okay, where are we going to hide out? Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and how long do I have to hide out? Is it for a week? Is it, you know, long term? Do I have to go into like a witness protection program in time?
And when I say hide out, I mean like you just can't be here in the present because they're going to get you if you are.
Okay.
So you jump in the time machine. Let's pretend no one is chasing you, but you have to like to lay low. You got to go and you got to spend a week in a year in the past.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
What year or decade would we'll say it that way. What year or decade would you want to spend, let's say, a week in?
Well, like,
go ahead,
if you can what? No.
If I can pick the week, I've got a couple interesting ideas.
Okay, what are you're going that angle. So where are you going?
If I can pick the week I'm hiding out in, how about July 1969?
Mm-hmm.
Let's be there when they land on the moon. Let's feel the excitement around that.
That would be cool.
That'd be kind of sweet.
Huh.
Just think of things like if I'm going to go hide out for a week, maybe, you know, mix a little business with pleasure and go see something cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I feel like the lame-o because I hit this question the other way. I was just like, okay, well, what week would I go to or what month does like we not even think about because nothing was happening, right? Like I'm going to go back if I'm hiding out, I'm going to go back into a time period and somewhere out middle of the woods where I can just kind of wander up, maybe, you know, get some remote campsite, whatever, just check in, not raise any suspicion, and just kind of like hang out on my own. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like I got the lame-o answer, but I think I get just because I overthought the question.
A lame-o answer?
How can I blend in? How can I disappear? How can I prevent the work emails, personal emails, the any emails from getting to me? You know
like,
what I'm saying?
You're like, I'm going back in time to the week before the Seward's Folly purchase.
There. That's exactly it.
Like one week before they signed the papers. That's where I'm
exactly.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
That works too. That's another way of doing it.
I don't want to end up in a, like if I'm hiding out, I don't want to end up in a picture. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't want to be like, wait a minute. How come Canigella's back there? Go get him, bring him back. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want that. I just want to be like, you know, have a little cabin on the sea by some trails, the woods, you know, go into town ever so often to get some supplies.
Yeah.
Hey, some weird dude. That wizard's just a crazy old man, mm-hmm. You know, like that kind of stuff. And then just, you know,
not getting your picture taken next to the clock tower.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that.
Yeah. Avoiding the clock tower is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's different time periods. I don't want to go too far back. You know, there's some benefits with modern medicine mm-hmm. and hygiene. You know what I'm saying? Like,
this is fair.
Yeah.
Like if I cut myself on a rusty nail or something, or I don't want to die from sepsis. Like I,
true.
You know, So I guess I thought, you know, more pragmatically or practically or whatever, but,
sure.
That's yeah. Fine. If I was hiding out now, if it was the question was, where do I want to visit and hang out? You know, could I get arugula? That's the question.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to have that.
Yeah. It's a vegetable. All right. And question number three, what's your favorite movie with futuristic law enforcement? I feel like my answer to this is fairly straightforward. I have to go Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Good call.
That's a fun one. Now you said movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good same movie.
Okay.
Do you have a TV show in mind?
I did, but it's fine. It was just the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah. What was the TV show?
Time Tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Fun little 90s TV show that I really liked.
Cool. I'm kind of partial. I have fun with the movie I, Robot. Mm-hmm. And I really like that the way they show the future is in some ways kind of the opposite of what we see in other movies where they really try and make the cars and the, you know, look more, you know, e-truck like, mm-hmm. you know, the guns are supposed to be more whiz bang and all this. And I think in that movie, they depict the future as really like a little bit closer to a continuum off of what we do now, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that they got robots and the cars and all this kind of stuff. I like that. I like the way they depict the future in that.
Bo, did you have a movie?
I kind of like Demolition Man.
That's fine. We can daily double it.
Yeah, I think. Well, no. You know what? You said it earlier, tangentially. I'm gonna go with the Time Police from Star Trek.
Oh yeah.
Oh wait, but that was never in a movie. Nope, never in a movie. Okay. I was back to TV again.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. How about the police from Back to the Future that take drunk old ladies home?
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the Future too.
It's a valuable public service.
Yeah, she just got a little drunk. She's had some great plastic surgery. We're just going to drop her off at home. That whole sequence is hysterical.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Excellent choice. Excellent choice. All right, everybody.
Chosen wisely.
Yeah. That's going to do it for this one. And that is, we are almost wrapping up our sci-fi month. So far this month, our Patreon episode was Starman from 1984. Patreon short was Oblivion from 1994. We've done Stargate. We did Star Trek Generations. This week was Time Cop. Next week is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. We've actually got our friend Rob Perry is coming back for that one. So looking forward to having him back to talk through that one. But yeah. Awesome, awesome stuff this month. We love sci-fi, so this has been kind of a fun month for us to run through some of these movies, and was really looking forward to talking about some of these. So absolutely, join us over on Patreon if you're not already. We've got a ton of bonus stuff over there. It also helps out the show when you join us over there and helps us kind of cover some of the costs of the show, keep everything running. So we really, really appreciate that. If you're not able to help out financially, we always appreciate it if you share this with friends, pets, family members, Julie, anybody you want to share this with. We always appreciate that. So let them know that we're here. And I'm sure of our 500 plus episodes we've got, there's at least one or two movies they might enjoy that we've talked about. So as always, gentlemen, Bo, Pat, thank you for being here.
Wait,
who walked in?
Yeah, wait a minute. Hang on.
Take it easy.
Gentlemen, when did I hire other people to co-host this show?
Yeah, I don't know what kind of joint you're running here, bub.
What place is this? When did we get standards?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't. Don't worry.
Yeah, no.
All right, everybody. Be excellent to each other. Go watch some good movies. We'll see you back here next time. Yeah.